Hello, my name is Daniel Delgado, and welcome to Focus and Focus. So excited that this is the 100th episode of this podcast. I can't believe we made it this far. We just signed off with a spinoff show with HBO, and it's coming this fall. And we also had Ansel Adams on the show. Like, that's crazy. I mean, wait. I'm getting ahead of myself. This is the first episode. This is my first podcast, and I want to thank you for joining me. This is a podcast where I'll be discussing various ideas with creatives and really trying to find more questions than answers. It really helps if you leave a comment or a review. That's how I get feedback, and it helps more people find the podcast. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at unfocused.am. Today, we'll be listening to a conversation I had with my friend Adriana Monsalve. Adriana is an artist and visual storyteller who runs an independent publishing house called Homie House Press, with her partner since 2016. Homie House is a skeleton bones crew of femmes creating and publishing in the photo book medium. They're photographers, bookmakers, and educators holding space for and with underrepresented communities. Adriana has taken many routes in her career as an artist, and she has a passion for storytelling. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about, along with some interesting takes on Bad Bunny. With all that said, let's focus in. Adriana, thanks for coming on. And, you know, I think before we get super into it, saying a little bit about yourself and what you do and maybe a little bit about Homie House.
Yeah, so I'm Adriana Monsalve. I feel like I've taken a million different routes to get to the space that I'm cultivating now as an artist. And like the space that I'm cultivating also is like a collaborative space. So I started as a photographer and I love photography, but don't get to do it as much as I would like to anymore. And now I definitely like hustle a lot more with independent publishing and in hopes to be able to like shoot more, which is what I was doing in Memphis. But yeah, like it's hard to get to actually shoot and to get paid for it and to like do all those things. But I feel like everything that I'm doing comes from photography and for the passion of storytelling. So yeah, ultimately I'm a visual communicator. I'm a storyteller that uses image and text.
And you're also part of this publication that you and your partner operate.
Yeah, Homie House Press it's an independent publishing house that me and Kate started in December of 2016. And it's a really dynamic space that is like multifaceted, and we do a lot of things. I'm realizing more and more, especially as the pandemic continues, that like we're flexing so many different muscles and we're actually really good at a lot of different things. Yeah. And I feel like this was made as like a platform for books, but it's actually like so much more. And we've been doing so much more outside of books as well, like within workshops and just the ways we talk about art and like being like really, really critical and like but looking as critique as care and looking at like these tender ways and careful ways to like to cultivate art spaces. So yeah, it's a really dynamic space that we started as for space to make books and tell our stories, but it's become just like a really, and right, specifically books and tell stories with photography, but it's become a place where like all kinds of artists are coming forward and able to collaborate with us in the book form.
When I think about Homie House and you as an artist, I think it's like a collective of people who can adapt in a place where people can tell their stories. You know, I think that's also such a huge thing. You know, with the pandemic kind of going on, how is Homie House like adapting and like maybe what's on cue?
Well, I think this word adapting is like, it's so on repeat lately.
Yeah.
And I think I feel privileged that we can adapt and like that we are a space that is so used to like, as artists, in a lot of ways, I feel like as artists and as creatives, I feel like in a lot of ways, like we're prepared for this in a lot more ways than most people, right? Like and prepared for the pandemic and that, like we're always having to figure out how to make money. We're always having to like navigate this in so many ways. Like we've definitely, as creatives, for the most part, like chosen the path of like most resistance. Like, right. And so it's like, we're always having to adapt to like figure out what's needed, how can we like continue to survive and be successful as creatives through this pandemic? We've been it's been a whirlwind. we haven't printed a book since it started, because we're realizing that like right now it just seems like the books that we were making, they wanted them more just like for the digital world. So we've just been like making them, and then like, okay, I guess it's a PDF for now, like whatever the artist needs, really, you know?
Right.
Because and we're also lucky in that like the printers that we work with, they're still going, like they haven't slowed down, and they've told us like if you still want to print, like our facilities are still going, so they can actually print. We just haven't done it yet because it's not what the artist needs.
So before we fully get into it, I think like that's an interesting point, but I feel like the last time we spoke, I just kind of want to like touch upon Bad Bunny, because like we kind of ended our conversation on this kind of like controversy. Not like, I don't know, like you said you have some thoughts on him. So I just want to kind of like briefly touch about that before we get super into it.
Bad Bunny, I feel like, honestly, I became aware of Bad Bunny last year. Like, I guess January of 2019 is when I started getting really into Bad Bunny. And so I was super hyped for this new album. And I think I was seeing him like, I don't know, I think I put him on a pedestal and I saw him very much like,
huh? Are you talking about the Quarantine album or the one that he released in the beginning?
No. I haven't even listened to the Quarantine one. We're like on such bad terms like that.
Okay, cool. Now we know where you're at.
Yeah. Like, right. So the one he put out in February, the end of February.
Which feels like, you know, ages ago.
It really does, homie. It really does. So weird. Like, that album, I feel like, I don't know, there was so much anticipation for all of us that are big fans and all this stuff. But I think I had put a lot of emphasis on him just because I felt like this is like one of the only artists that I was seeing, like talking about queerness in really fluid ways. And the way that I felt like they were like just identifying. And I just felt like for a Latinx person, like these are all things that like, yeah, that's been so much said about it, you know, like about the way that he's taking up this space. But once the album came out and like I was like listening to it so hardcore for like a month. So yeah, for like the first month of, I guess, the pandemic, honestly, for all of right. March. And then around April, I was like, the more he would put out the videos, that went along with the album, and the more that like that he was quarantined and I was seeing his like Instagram stuff, I was like, I don't even think this guy, like, I don't know. I just felt like it's more appropriation of queer culture than anything.
Is there one song that you've been noticing? Because I think the music video for me that stands out the most is Yo Perreo Sola. And that's like, I think touches upon a lot. And yeah, I think, you know, as like, how do you feel about that? Because I think there's a sense of like, is it appreciation or like appropriation, you know?
That's the video that really was like, whoa, Adriana, think about your life right now. Like, this guy is not here for you. Like, he's just like, oh, literally, do I go, like, lo que me da la gana, like, I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to stop me because I'm such a hot boy right now. And I always just, like, hot commodity. Like, yeah, it's not about you. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's not. I used to think it was like, oh, like, I do whatever the fuck I want because, like, because I've been through this, because I'm, like, because I see my value now, because I'm, like, aware of, like, the power that I hold. Which is like all really empowering stuff. Now I'm like, no, you can do whatever the fuck you want because you're so fucking entitled and privileged and just like want to do whatever you can to get attention.
I don't know. Like, I feel like because he is Puerto Rican, I just resonate so much with him as like a voice. It's hard for me to like, I almost want to like, you know, like defend him, you know? I'm like, it's a little on the line for me sometimes because he has been such an advocate for like this community, like the LGBTQ community. And again, it feels like forever ago, like on Fallon when he showed Alexa Luciano Ruiz, who was a transgender woman who was unfortunately murdered in Puerto Rico. And I was like, oh, yes, this is great. Like, he's doing such a good job. He understands his place and he's like vocalizing. But do you feel like what is the right way to tell these stories appropriately? Like, where's that line or like how can it be done?
I guess like my first question is like, why? Just femmes in general, if he's like leaning into all this femme stuff and like femme identities and trans and all these things, like, first of all, where's the credit for the femmes on your actual album? Like, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So bad. Number two, if he's such an ally of the LGBT community, community and like he's so like about it. Like, why is there no like queer singers on your that you're featuring? Like, why is like who do you actually hang out with that's queer? Who do you actually know that's queer, Bad Bunny? Like, he's actually just like a boys' gang. Like, he's just like all these like Puerto Rican boys, whatever. They're all hot boys. They're all like really dope, whatever. But I don't know. I just feel like it's like he says it because he knows it's good for him and like he knows what's up. But I'm like, who is your actual queer community?
Right.
I don't even buy it. Like, it just sounds like a lot of lip service.
Mm. And number That makes sense.
Yeah. And number three, I'm like, okay, Yo Perreo Sola is so like empowering and so badass in so many ways. And really, like, when I heard it, in a lot of ways, I was just like, whoa, like, that, I mean, before seeing the video, before, like, any of the visuals, like, were out there, I was hearing it in the sense, like, whoa, Bad Bunny is, like, really, like, coming into, like, his femme identity and really identifying more as, like, a they-them or something, because they're referring to themselves as, like, femme and all these things. And I was like, maybe it's, like, this thing where, like, yeah, he may be talking about some like a story about a girl, but then it may also be talking about himself. Cause I feel like there's so many lyrics in this album of him like in the club alone, like, and he says it so multiple times. And it's like, that's a thing. Like, that's a thing. And I think that's a thing for a lot of people, especially for like gay culture. Like, so, like, guys go to gay clubs so much alone. Like, that's like a thing where like I feel like it's not as much otherwise. So I was just like, okay, there's like a lot of like hints and things that I felt like, but maybe I'm also just looking for these things. I don't know. And so like to hear it and to see, hear him talking about it in that way. And like, and then seeing the visual, I was like, whoa, like this is not that. Like, number one, it looks like he's super appropriating and just really trying to do whatever he can to get attention. And number two, even if like, even if he is trying to like subtly talk about the fact that he is a more like fluid identity and a fluid being, like, why did he have to like appropriate? Why couldn't he just still be how he dresses? Because he just does dress fluid, had to be drag. Maybe like mixing up all these things, and it's so beautiful the way he like presents himself. And it's like that, and all of that is still femme. Like, you could have still just done how he was.
Yeah.
Like a femme saying like sola.
Right.
So I don't know, it was super confusing. And it was just this is not a queer person. This is someone that is really like doing harm in a lot of ways.
I think I was like reading in I think it was like the LA Times, he like did that interview. I don't know if you are aware of it. It's like there's this one quote that kind of stands out where he's like basically he doesn't know if, you know, he does talk about like sexual fluidity as like our generation and like within himself and hints upon like, or like he's quoted saying like, I don't know if I'll be with a man in 20 years. And I think that's like,
right. Yeah,
it's like, I don't know. It's if there's something there, but since he is now just identifying as, you know, straight, it's hard to say, I think.
Exactly. It's like you say that, anyone can say that. Like, because in a lot of ways, like, I mean, this hits at a much bigger topic.
Yeah.
What you just said hits at a much larger topic in the sense that, like, queer, this, like, identity of this thing of queer to me is becoming, like, more of, like, it's like the new hipster. Like, everyone wants to say they're queer. Or whatever. And it's, I feel like, do you even know what queer is? Like, and then also maybe like, I mean, no, not maybe. I definitely know that for myself, also that's like gatekeeping, like me saying, that's not queer. Like, who am I to say what's queer and what isn't? Like, queer is so many things.
Right.
You know what I mean?
For sure. I feel like I get like somewhat confused as somebody who's not a part of that community. I almost feel like I have to, since it's like it's a very like wide non-binary non-conforming thing, it's like it could be so much and so many things, and I think it gets a little blurry sometimes, you know, especially if
it's
somebody
like part
who,
of the beauty of it. And this isn't like, I haven't had like a larger conversation with this with like a group of like people or anything. Like, I've talked about it with like a couple of queer homies and we all are like, whoa, this is kind of weird. And everyone's kind of like, it's just, I don't know, Bad Bunny doesn't hit the same anymore. Like, I haven't been able to listen to his music and enjoy it. I can't. Because it's different. And really, I think, Yeah, he is identifying in this, like, he says, it's like he says the right things, but he's, like, really identifying in this completely other way. Mm. And since his Instagram posts have been, like, so, like, I don't know, sexual with his boo, and he's, like, all of a sudden now comes, like, talking about this boo that he's had for 3 years. And it's, like, this is all really confusing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And not saying that, like, oh, like, I was expecting him to date. I mean, not trying to, like, police who he's dating or anything in that way either. Just, like, it's just really weird the way he's, like, portraying himself, choosing to portray himself right now.
Definitely. No, definitely. I think, you know, I feel like all that is just so, I mean, I think, like, it's eye-opening to hear, like, you know, like the whole femme, like at least a female artist not being like represented in his album. And these kind of little moments, you know, it does create like some confusion. And now I'm like, I have to process this, you know. I think there's an interesting note. But I think it kind of hints around like the scope of like, how should these stories be told or like heard? For the most part, there's a lot of this kind of like potential, you know, backlash, you know, but us being, you know, people who are people of color and who are part of these kind of communities, we kind of like need a plan sometimes, or like most of the time, of like how not, you know, how should we tell our stories? What is like a sort of marketing plan to block out this potential backlash? And then there are, you know, some people with privilege, mostly white people, who kind of don't need that. And I feel like as a publication house, do you have to deal with that a lot? Or do you have to like think about that when you have like people coming at you with like projects and ideas for stories?
I think we did the first. So in 2019, so last year, beginning of last year, when we put out the initiative of Baby Boys. Baby Boys is an initiative that we started in 2019 in order to like do bridge work with like people that aren't femme identifying, and to start collaborating for the first time with like male identifying bodies. And as Homie House Press is like a very femme space and is very for us, by us, about us, the fact that we were doing that, we knew it was like it could be taken a bunch of different ways. We knew that like a lot of like the really liberal young like the youth, and usually, I mean, honestly, like Homie House, honestly, most of our community and followers is like queer youth. So I did think about that a lot, and that like if we do this Baby Boys initiative, people will possibly get like feel like, why are you giving space to these boys? Like, they don't need it. Why are you? I don't know. And I was worried about it, but I also felt like, coming off the back of all this stuff in 2017 to 2018 about like Me Too movement and all these things, like there was just like so much throwing away of male identities that, which like, I don't know, in a lot of ways, all of that is murky too, because I guess I've never felt like, yeah, throw all men away. Like, don't, like, I don't want to talk, collaborate, like anything, like whatever. I never felt that way, but I know a lot of people in my community did. And so also doing Baby Boys was a way for me to like make peace with that, and to really show like, hey, this is still a courageous space. Like, it's fundamentally a courageous space, and that like these conversations that we need to have within photography big time, about the space that men always take up, and inviting boys to collaborate in a space that is like so queer, like, and challenge the way they're doing things. It's work that is like, I mean, it's definitely hard work and it's uncomfortable work, but I don't know. I'm just never going to be fully on this cancel culture.
Basically, you know, I think it's like you are able to travel to one state to another. Mm-hmm. And I think like you're able to see different types of communities. And basically I'm like trying to figure out like, is one topic about like, is there one discussion that is kind of brought up continuously? And maybe like, what are like some outlier conversations that are in one place, but really not in another?
Yeah. People are, I don't know. It's really interesting. Like these fairs and how people behave with the books, and like really interesting situations was, the newspaper we did with a baby boy, with Brett Gundlach, that was the Migrant Trail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that one we did in English and Spanish. It's like a really, it's a really large scale publication, and that it's like 11.5 by 15 inches, which is pretty big. And I mean, the picture on the cover is very like, it's, you can't not see it. You cannot look away from it either. It's a really beautiful project where Brett Gundlach was traveling with the Caravan Migrante that happened in November of 2018. Yeah, November 2018. Mm-hmm. From like going all the way through Central America, all the way up to the Tijuana border. And basically he does like this, right, I'm explaining it for your listeners.
I have it. It's amazing.
So basically, like, it's a really interesting take because he does an individual look. Like, he's literally going on this, traveling with them, and he's like humanizing them, where they were being shown in this very specific way, and just shown as like a mass, as a caravan, where all of these people have like very specific stories, and they're coming through, like they're doing this really dangerous thing for a very specific reason. Mm-hmm. And he was interviewing and spending like so much time with each like person that he was traveling with, and like did this really gorgeous piece that we were really, really thrilled to collaborate with him on.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, we love Brett. He's a homie. It's really
cool. It was one of those things where, like, as you say, it really humanizes like the person and like the communities within, like specifically within this caravan. Because I think like for the most part, people of color in the media and like at least, you know, was specifically talking about this caravan moving forward, it was like deemed as like a threat, and like all these negative connotations were like drawn to it. And I think seeing, and for those, I would totally recommend like to look into this project, because it really shows the faces, the people, like, you know, they all have their backstories. They have different reasons, and most of them are life-threatening reasons for why they are a part of this group. And I think that shows way more than just like this mass, you know. I think like, I remember he like highlighted them with like a backdrop, and it was great. It was just like a way to pinpoint on the person in a space that was like potentially filled with so many others. We as like creatives, I think when we're dealing with things like this, we kind of have to be kind of aware of the facts and like what is around us and like the information. And it's like the transparency, you know, I think that's super key. Are there like specific stories that you're kind of like drawn to that kind of pull you in, and like does your approach change like depending on like each story? Or
like in my own practice as a photographer, as a storyteller, you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
I think like this idea of like, are all the facts there and all these things, and like really like looking at the truth, I think that's a really hard thing to look at, in the sense that photojournalism is, yes, it's the realm of photography that I like navigate in, and it's like what I love. But I also know that it's like photojournalism is a lie. Like all photography is a lie in so many different ways. And that like, that's why like you need to like trust the storyteller and trust whatever, because most photographers, like cameras lie all the time. And mm-hmm. you can make them say whatever you want. You can put whatever text next to it and all these things. So this thing about like the truth and like, and what is the truth and all these things, I just feel like there is no truth. There is no absolute truth. Mm. And I know for a photojournalist to say something like that, like, I mean, like, that's not, it's really against what I was taught. But I just, the more I've used cameras and the more I like live in this world and like really challenging the way stories are told, I just feel like wanting to show the truth isn't necessarily like, it doesn't work. It doesn't necessarily make sense. Like, I feel like there's more honest ways to navigate this, to navigate like showing the facts than like I don't know. Ultimately, like for myself, I mean, I feel like the way that I use photography and text to like tell stories and stuff, like a lot of the work that I do is like paralleling stories and paralleling and like really making like a lot of space for gray and inserting myself into the stories. And like, I mean, a lot of it doesn't end up being super factual, Like, it's kind of this in-between space of, like, where I am, like, pairing memories in some ways, like, memories or ideas with nonfiction. So, and it's, to me, what I feel like is the most honest thing is, like, being a little bit playful and then showing, and then, like, photographing things how I see them. I wouldn't say it's truth. I just say it's not nonfiction. And like that to me is the most honest way to show things. Cause I just feel like is that really confusing?
No, I mean, the way that I'm kind of seeing it and what's kind of coming to my mind is you're creating, when it comes to stories, you're creating a reality that you know to be true because it's something that is like deep and impersonal for you. And I think like when you talk about memory, it's like you're putting your own context within the story. And I think you're trying your best to get those facts or like get those transparencies, but you want to also like provide the way that you're seeing the story. And like, I think that's an important factor. I think there's, when it comes to a big media company, like, I don't know, like, you know, CNN or just as how we elect people for government of like roles, like, we kind of trust their perspective on what the truth is. And, you know, I think lately that's been kind of lacking in higher government. But I think when it comes to personal projects and like the way that we kind of transform ideas, like, I think that's the only kind of way that I personally relate to that. You know, it's like you kind of have to believe what you believe and see where you end up.
I feel like I learned a while ago that like whatever I want to, if I come into a thing thinking of like what I want to say and that I want to get this across, you run into so many new tangents like while doing this and this connects to this. And like I've kind of allowed myself to go into all the tangents like in the past 3 years, like while shooting. I'm just like, I don't know. I just feel like for myself, it ends up being a lot more honest. And yeah, I've been a lot more loose with the way I tell stories, a lot more loose and a lot more like, yeah, again, I'm a trained photojournalist, but I'm not a photojournalist anymore. I'm an artist that uses that medium, but I'm definitely not a photojournalist anymore.
There's a lot to do with, you know, the story, like when you are telling the story and when you are writing a story, like, do the two always need to go together, or do you think like they can be separated?
For me, it's really separate actually. And it's actually evolved a lot too. Like when I started shooting, I mean, I was only a photographer. Like I would never ever say that I would be willing to write anything or like do text with it at all. And that's when I first picked up a camera like 10 years ago. But since then, and since going to grad school and stuff, I definitely have leaned a lot more into writing, but writing was something that came secondary. And the writing was something that after I would shoot everything, after I did all the interviews, after I edited everything too, then I would finally like feel like I was ready to write. So it was literally the last thing after shooting, after like transcribing interviews, after like, it was like me actually putting my own personal thoughts and like blending this all together was the last thing I would do. And it was something that would scare me a lot. I just felt like it wasn't as natural to me. And also because, yeah, I hadn't been doing it as long. But in the past 2 years, it's like not even 2 years, the past year and a half or so, I feel like where before I could never have written anything without photography. Like I need the photography in order to write. Like I'm writing in reaction to my own photography in a lot of ways. Like I'm collaborating with myself in a lot of ways because I don't do it at the same time. Like I need one to do the other. But now I feel like I can write forever and then like I can shoot later, or I can even like, I can write and not need to shoot, which is also super interesting to me. And also super interesting, like when was it? It was like November, I think, was like the first time that I got paid to just write with no photography, with nothing else attached to it. Just writing. I was like, wait, what? I'm like a writer. It was an exhibition that was in DC. It was called From the Margins. Do you know, what's this photographer? Mapplethorpe?
Sounds familiar.
He's a photographer from, like, I want to say this was in the 80s. Michael Mapplethorpe? I don't know. Mapplethorpe is very controversial. I'll tell you quickly what it was that I wrote. Mm-hmm. Well, Mapplethorpe is a really controversial, like, person in, like, photography. He basically he photographs, like, a lot of nude Black men, and he's, like, a white gay guy. And so when he wanted to do this show, like all the museums, when they realized what it was, like, because he was like a big time like photographer. So when he wanted to do this show at the Smithsonian, I think it was. Uh-huh. So it had already been like everything was like they had the contract was everything, like it had been like settled. But then like when they saw what it was and that it was all gonna be like Black nude men. They refused to do it, and they took away everything, and they said no, they wouldn't do it. And so it was this space where like there was no freedom of speech. It was just like this whole thing about like why are we censoring the nude body, like, and like also like a queer body, Black bodies, like all these things. Where it was 20 years, yeah, it was 20 years.
Was he based years. In New York? Was he the New York photographer?
I don't know where he's based.
No,
where he's based.
I feel like it's coming up in some kind of way, but it might be somebody.
Yeah,
else.
Yeah, because last year, 2019, was like the 30-year reunion, the 30-year like since it had happened. Maybe it was 40. I don't know.
Time. Yeah. Time is like really weird these days. So yeah. I get it.
It was like some big number of years since that had happened. And so there was, and because it happened in DC, there was a bunch of different galleries and like museum spaces that were doing like now like reaction exhibitions to it. For one of the exhibitions that was in, it was at Washington Project for the Arts. That's the name of the gallery. They're a really dope space. It's a smaller gallery and it's really, really cool. They do really like really alternative things. They had asked me to write like a review of the exhibit for the catalog, for the exhibition catalog. So, and I was like, that's like crazy that you're asking me to like write about something without anything with, I mean, yeah, it's with photography, but it's not, they didn't tell me what to write. I could write it in whatever way I wanted, but really it's talking about identity and talking about how like representation and the ways that we're seen and all these things. So, I mean, yeah, I'm always going to be writing around photography because that's what I love. But to just be paid to write without any photography included on my own was like, whoa, I'm a writer.
Have you been writing any more since then?
Yeah, no. So it's something that I feel like it's like I can write a lot more all the time now without needing to like react to my own photography or needing to like express it with photography. And I feel like writing is something that has become very much a part of my practice. And even though like not fully comfortable with saying I'm a writer, it's definitely something that I don't have to do like with photography now.
When do you think you would feel comfortable saying that you're a writer?
I don't know. I feel like it's so new.
Right.
I feel like it's so new that like, who knows? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe in
That's
a
cool.
year.
Yeah, you never know. What's next for you?
We're working on, moving forward through this and realizing that like things aren't going to change. We don't know when's the next time we'll be able to do it. We don't know when's the next time we'll be able to like be able to engage with people in the physical about books again. Mm-hmm. It's really sad, but we're coming to terms with it. And in that space, we're kind of like allowing ourselves to like just, I guess, be a little bit risky and scary a little bit where like me and Kate have decided that like, we do want to like the project that we're taking on right now that we will actually like commence fully tomorrow is a project that we've been putting off for a while because of the pandemic and because like we've felt like this is like a really new artist and will it even sell if we make it? Will it sell online? Like we've never like sold a majority of the, like a bulk of like an edition through online. We've never done that. But we need to try. It's our youngest collaborator ever. He's a high school kid in New York and he's a really insane photographer. His name is Raisul Islam. I'm obsessed. I'm such a fan.
That's awesome.
He's 16 and he's an incredible photographer. I met him at New York Art Book Fair.
Oh, sick.
He kept coming back to our table, to the Homie House table, and just kept asking the cutest questions. And he's like, can I email you later? Can I email you later? And I was like, yeah, email me whatever you want. And the email was like saying like, I wanna, can you guys publish me? Like, I don't know. But it was like, so like,
he was humble.
Asking this, thinking that like, this could never happen. That like, right. Like, he's in high school. Like, how did like, yeah, he doesn't, I feel like it's like, I don't know how publishing is so foreign to me and I'm in it. Like, yeah. I can't imagine what that feels like at 16.
That's awesome.
And when I saw, and I remembered him because he was so like, he was so cute and he kept coming back and kept talking to me and like asking about every single book and asking about every single photographer. And like, he was really into the stuff. And also he was precious in that he loved Clear as Black. And he kept like, he's like, you're Clear as Black. You're the person that does Clear as Black. And I'm like, I'm her, I'm she. And he's like, I love Clear as Black. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is so cool.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
All those things like made me remember him even more. And so when he wrote that email and when he sent a link to his stuff, I was like, what? Like, both me and Kate were like in his Instagram looking at his website for like the longest, and like, I can't believe this kid is only 16.
What's his name again?
Raisul Islam.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's a really dope. I can send you a link.
Yeah, please. I'll make sure to like put in like the it's weird this like show notes and all this stuff.
You would love that.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
So we felt really bad because Raisul was supposed to be one of the first projects that we like were doing this year, but we had to keep putting it off because of the pandemic and because of all these things, and also because like he's a youth, so it was something where Homie House would be covering the cost fully. Like, right. There was going to be like, and that's like a lot of risk for us in this space. And like, but now we feel like we've been in this long enough to know like, this is going to continue. We're figuring out how to stay afloat and we're adapting. And I feel like this is a good time to like try something different and like to trust our community and trust that they will continue to support us as they always have. And to like sell out this book. So
that's amazing. That's awesome. Yeah, that's super.
It is so cool. So we'll see. We start officially. I mean, we started, I guess, in January, but we start again. We're picking it up again tomorrow.
Yeah. The new year starts now, basically. This new year is now.
Yeah. I'm so excited. Because he's such a youth, he allows us to be really experimental, with which a lot of collaborators often like will be like, can we do this and this? And they'll be like, oh, that's really like a lot. That's really bright. Like, and we tone it down for whatever reason. I mean, all Homie House stuff is really like very bright colors, very RuPaul colors anyways. But like, I feel like with him, like with Raisul, we don't have to tone anything down. Like, he's down for, we can be as queer as we want to be.
That's what's up. That's awesome. I feel like having that field, especially at a young age, to just kind of see what your art or photography could take hold of, is like an awesome space to take it. I think like him collabing with you and Gathe on this is like perfect.
I'm excited. He's really talented.
I'm excited.
Like, he's really cool. Just using photography in really like sensitive ways. And also we had no idea, but he's also a writer. Like, he writes all these poems. And so he showed us all his poems and we're like, okay, we need to include this. We didn't know. And he didn't know it was something he wanted to include. And then like, no, it's nuts and a privilege to be able to mentor and guide someone that is like that talented at that young of an age. Like, then, homie, you're gonna like run Magnum one day.
That's what's up. How do you feel? What does that feel like to be in that kind of role?
It feels really fun. Honestly, it feels like such a privilege to me that like that Raisul found us, that we connected, and that I feel like he's so talented. I'm just like, it's rare. It's really rare. And it feels like something that I wanna do right by him. That I really want this book to be so amazing because he is so young and this is such a rare thing. And then we're launching it during such a weird time. I really want it to sell out completely.
I'll be pushing it. I'll be pushing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and my like five followers, including my mom. We'll be pushing it.
The best hype people, is true.
Yeah. Familia gotta stick together, you know? I think that's the 2020 vibe check.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Adriana, thank you so much for hopping on. Where can people find you and your work?
Homeos Press is available through the interwebs. You can find us at alianastories.com. And that Homeos Press is linked to that as well. On Instagram, we are at Homeos Press. Just like it sounds, homie as in H-O-M-I-E, house as in house, press. And then my personal Instagram is not as exciting as homie house, but it's A-M photo, F-O-T-O, spelled like a good Latinx.
Hey, what are three books you recommend people look up at homie house?
Three books to look up. First one, Fronteras, is really dope. Come and buy it.
The
really large collaboration we did that we put out last summer. So it'll be
that was on Hypebeast recently too.
It was on Hypebeast.
That's what's up. That was awesome.
So weird. Yeah, so cool. So
definitely check that one out.
Definitely get First Fronteras. Definitely get Sammy's. It's our really fun and like kind of playful way to look at cookbooks and play with cookbooks, and really talks about like food and identity as like an intersectional space. Really beautiful space, the intersection of food and identity. Sammy's, First Fronteras, and what else do I recommend? Oh, I recommend the new newspaper, Even the Score, Volume 2, Vote. It was a collaboration that I did as a residency with Bowie State University, which is HBCU, is based in here in Maryland. The whole collaboration was me with 16 students that they were all investigating and talking about like preparing their own communities to vote for November 2020 and like talking about suppression of vote for Black and Brown communities. And how voting is such a like tumultuous and messy thing for everyone, but especially for us. And so in the newspaper, they give all types of resources. They do all types of reasons of like policies that they want to change, policies that like that we should be voting for. And no, they did an amazing job. Really cool.
Sick. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, totally.
This is amazing. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time. Yeah.
Sure. It's a pleasure. Quick, can I take a selfie?
Yeah, definitely.
Of us, and I can hype the podcast.
Big thank you to Adriana for coming on and talking with me. We covered a lot in this episode, so make sure you guys check the show notes on our website at focusonfocus.am for more details. Make sure to follow Adriana on Instagram as well as Homie House at Homie House Press and AM Photo. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I did making it. It'd be great if you guys leave a comment or review. That's how more people find this podcast. And if you guys want to keep yourself up to date on future episodes, subscribe and follow us. Oh, and don't you think I forgot about the HBO premiere that's going to happen in 10 years, right? RSVP right now by following us on Instagram at unfocus.am and wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to support the podcast or the future premiere, find us on Patreon at Focus on Focus. Huge thank you to Charlie Cooper for the excellent intro and outro music, and special thanks to all my friends who have helped me so far in creating this first episode. With all that said, see you next time.